Welcome students for today's session on managerial economics, and today we will be discussing chapter 8, that is production function, isoquants and economies of scale. In this chapter we will be focusing on various laws of production which become a guiding principle for determining the maximum profit output level. So let's understand what production is. We say production refers to creation of something tangible which can be used to satisfy human wants. In economics, production basically involves creating tangible goods and of course services also which satisfy the needs of human beings. And in economics, production just does not mean only transforming input to output. We say that production is addition of utilities. Which means that whenever a raw material, for example a piece of wood, when it is converted into a beautiful furniture, form utility gets added. From the place of manufacturing to the place of marketing, there is a time and place utility involved. So in economics, we do not restrict only with the concept that transforming raw material into finished good is production. Production basically means adding of utilities at every stage of production. So production becomes a time-bound program. Right from the day a businessman invests money till the final product is launched, the whole process becomes a production process. So students, whenever you pick up any topic on production, first thing to be remembered is it is a time-bound program. It is not just converting input to output, but it rather involves setting up business plant, investing money, hiring capital, purchasing machinery, hiring labor, quality control, cost accounting. The entire process is production. Let's go ahead. This is what we were discussing about, that there are four types of utility which gets involved in production process. Form utility: wood converted into furniture, steel converted into a steel rod or a table and chair, form utility. Time utility: at the time when the demand is high, supplying the products to meet that demand, which means matching the supply with the demand, is time utility. Place utility: place of manufacturing, that is the place of plenty to the place of scarcity, supplying the products where they are not available. We are here talking about distribution. Today in the marketing scenario, the channel of distribution have increased. Today we have multiple ways of supplying the products from one place to the other. So automatically place utility gets added. And the last is personal utility. When you talk of personal utility, it is specially dealing with the professionals. When we talk of professionals, the chartered accountants, the doctors, there are n number of products which you as consumers buy or avail for. Like for example, banking services, telecom services, hospitalization, medical services. You are not just buying a product, but you are hiring the services. And therefore, all those professionals who are involved in creating these services bring personal utility. So kindly remember that in production, we have four types of utility which keeps on getting added at every stage of production. Finally, we would again go back to conclude what production is. We say that production is a process of addition of utilities to the existing matter by changing form, place and keeping it over time. Which means once the product is manufactured, it has to be stocked, time utility, and it has to be supplied. That stock has to be released whenever the market demand picks up. Technologically, production is referred to transforming input to output, and every transformation involves the use of factors of production. So we have to be very clear that in the production process, the four main factors get involved: land, labor, capital, entrepreneur, that is organization. There cannot be production possible without involving land, labor, capital, and organization. So let me make you understand the role of each factor of production, that is land, labor, capital, and organization. When we speak of land, in economics, land refers to all the natural resources. That means all that is lying above the surface of earth, on the surface of earth, and below the surface of earth is considered as land. The symbol used for land is therefore N. N stands for natural resources. Labor. Labor refers to any type of mental and physical effort which is made in the process of production by the human resource. So labor basically involves the mental and physical effort in the process of production. Capital. Capital basically involves the money as well as the assets. That means when we are investing money and at the same time purchasing machinery, both include the word capital. Capital is a man-made factor of production. Capital can be termed as real capital, that is physical assets, machinery, material, tools, equipment, and money capital in the form of money invested as well as shares, financial resources, and last is organization. When we talk of organization, that is the entrepreneur. Entrepreneur is the most important factor because the entrepreneur organizes these three factors of production. So land, labor, capital, all are scattered. They have to be brought together under one roof for the production to be successful. And that is the job of organization. So land is said to be the primary factor of production. Labor, capital, organization are secondary factors. Now we will go ahead to understanding the technical relation between input and output in the form of various laws. When we study about these laws, it's very important that we focus on production function. As you see here, production function is a technical relation telling maximum amount of output capable of being produced by each and every set of specified inputs. It is defined for a given set of technical knowledge. Now students, the moment you start studying about laws of production, you have to keep in mind production function. The entire chapter of production revolves around production function. What is this production function? It is an equation. It is an arrangement of inputs and output in a mathematical form. We will be looking at this with the help of a table and a calculation. So, it is defined as the relationship between the rates of input of productive services, that is how much resources are used, and the rate of output of the product. So we are basically measuring here how much resources are used, the rate of at which the inputs are used, and compared to that, what is the rate of output. It is the economist summary of technical knowledge. In other words, the entire engineering data of input and output is simplified by economist under the term production function. Well, let us look at this production function. Like we had just a moment back understood what a production function is, let us understand how it is being written in the form of a mathematical equation. Q stands for output, F stands for function, and in the bracket I have written the various factors of production which are necessary for determining a given volume of output. N, land, L, labor, K, capital, E, entrepreneur, and I have included two variables, T, technology, M, management. How we would read this? We would say the volume of output or the units of output that can be produced is functionally dependent on land, labor, capital, entrepreneur, technology, and management. In this production function, we cannot specify which of these factors play an important role in determining the volume of output. But we know one thing, that the total units of output that will be produced will functionally depend on either of these factors. This is what a production function is all about. Further, we will connect this production function with time. When we talk of time, we divide this time into two categories. SR, short run, LR, long run. So just be clear that the time in production gets divided into SR and LR. Whenever you take this equation or this production function, you have to remember that if it is short run, then at least one factor from this should be fixed. And if we take this function in the long run, then all the factors are variable. So now, keeping this in mind, we will start with the very first law called as law of returns. There is another name for this law, which is law of variable proportions. So, when you talk of law of variable proportions, to understand this law, we require a production function schedule. This is a production schedule. We call it as short run production schedule. It consists of four columns. First column indicates labor. Second indicates the total productivity of labor, that is TPL. Next is average productivity of labor, APL. And finally, marginal productivity of labor, MPL. To understand this schedule, I go back to the production function, and from this whole production function, I pick up only two variables. And the two variables which we shall use for understanding this schedule will be L and K, labor and capital. So now, what does your production function becomes? Q is equal to F of N, which is land. We are not taking it anywhere over here, so we ignore it. E, again, we are not specifying it. Technology, management, they become constant. They are long run variables. They change after a long span of time. It is not very fast to change the technology and management in business. And therefore, the most simplest model of understanding the technical relation between input and output is taking two variables, labor and capital, in the production function. But here I have only written L, labor. So where does K go? K, capital. Nothing is mentioned about capital in the schedule, which means that this is a law which consists of two variables. One is fixed and one is variable. Labor is variable because the numbers are changing. Therefore, capital is assumed to be constant. To understand this, we will take a hypothetical example of a mine. A mine where the miners have to go and extract coal. If the employer wants more and more coal to be extracted from the mine, then he understands that he has to increase the number of miners because capital is a fixed asset. Capital remains fixed. So what he does is, he brings the drill machines and keeps it in the mine and keeps on adding labor units to increase output. Now, an economist makes use of this schedule called as labor and productivity schedule. And you have to remember that L is variable 1 to 6. As the labor units are increasing, the total productivity of labor is increasing. What is total productivity of labor? Total work done by the total number of workers. So, when there are two people working in the mine, the total amount of work done is 8. Now, what is this 8? 8 stands for Q, output. Now, our output is coal. And let us measure coal in tons. How do we read it? One miner comes, he extracts 5 tons of coal. Two miners together, two people are working now. So the total work increases. From 5 it becomes 8. 8 it becomes 12. 14. So the work is increasing as the miners are increasing. But is it increasing in the same proportion? When we ask such a question, is the total productivity increasing in the same proportion? To answer that question, you have to make use of MP, marginal productivity of labor. How is marginal productivity of labor calculated? The formula is total productivity of N, that is total productivity of N workers, minus total productivity of N minus 1 workers. I repeat, marginal productivity of labor is total productivity of N workers minus total productivity of N minus 1. Let us go back and understand. For the first labor unit, the marginal productivity cannot be calculated because marginal productivity reflects by how much the total productivity is increasing. So, total productivity of two miners is 8 minus total productivity of 1. So, 8 minus 5 is equal to 3. Therefore, the productivity of the second miner is 3 units. Or 3 tons of coal is extracted by the second miner alone. Like, one miner, one labor, does the work of 5 units. Two people together complete the work for 8 units. But how much did the second person contribute? When I am interested in knowing how much is the contribution made by the second worker or the second variable factor, I have to work on marginal productivity. So 8 minus 5 is 3. Like that, students, you can keep calculating ahead. 12 minus 8 gives you 4. So 4 units becomes the productivity of the third. Then you go to 4. Here again, you will see that the contribution is 2. It means that marginal productivity gives us an idea of how much additional worker is contributing additionally to output. Let's look at the last one column which is left, AP, average productivity. Average productivity is a very simple calculation. We say that average productivity is total productivity divided by N, which means 5 divided by 1 is 5, 8 divided by 2 is 4, 12 divided by 3, 4. Average, work is equally divided. So if 3 people together have contributed 12 units, per person's contribution becomes 4. 12 divided by 3. So each one has contributed equally. That's an average picture. So this is one schedule in which we try to understand that when the variable factor is increased to the fixed factor, how does the productivity gets affected? How does the output change? Now let us convert this whole table into a diagram. So students, now we are going to plot this schedule in the form of a graph. And as you see, here we have drawn a graph where on the x-axis we are measuring labor and on the y-axis we will measure all the three columns of average, marginal and total productivity. The first is the total productivity graph, which is increasing up to a certain point, then it becomes constant and it starts falling. The average productivity graph continuously falls because it is based on this schedule 5, 4, 4, 3.2, 2.8 and 2, and therefore it starts falling. The marginal productivity increases and then it starts falling. So you can see a small increase of MP here and then it starts continuously falling, becomes 0 and then becomes negative. What have we done is, we have taken the intersection point of AP and MP. If you look at this schedule, 4 and 4, average productivity and marginal productivity are equal for the third unit of labor. So the third unit of labor, his marginal productivity is equal to average. Matlab, he is contributing in the work as average contribution is. So this becomes our point of drawing a perpendicular line and we will declare it as the first stage of production. As we go further, we will pick up the next where the marginal productivity becomes zero. That is for the fifth unit of labor. As you see in the graph, fifth unit of labor, the contribution is zero. So the point is here. From there we draw another perpendicular line. In this way, what have we done is, we have divided this graph into three compartments and named it as first, second and third. As you observe closely, you will realize that in the first stage, most of these graphs are increasing except the average. But at least it had increased. So this is called as the increasing stage of production. This stage indicates that every additional factor, the variable factor, is making optimum use of the fixed factor. So the drill machines will be used by the miners, in our example, more and more frequently. It means that all those machines which were lying unutilized will be used to the optimum as we keep on increasing the units of labor. So we call it as an increasing stage. The reason is that the output will increase in a larger and faster proportion. Later on, the proportion between the fixed and the variable factor will start becoming imbalanced. And that is where you will find that the average productivity graph starts falling. That means on an average, the work starts going down. The output, the rate of output starts decreasing. Even though the total productivity graph is increasing. So even if average work is getting reduced, as long as the total work is going to the maximum, there is no harm in entering in stage second and continuing with the task. But every additional worker, the contribution is less. So marginal productivity is reducing at a rapid pace. There may be many reasons for this. Fatigue, too many hours of working, or as I said, imbalance between the fixed and the variable factors. But as long as the total work has not reached the maximum limit, we continue hiring the variable factors. The employer continuously uses the variable factor to the fixed factor. Therefore, this stage is called as a constant stage of constant returns or decreasing returns. But once we find a limit where the contribution becomes zero, fifth unit of labor's contribution is zero, we call it as zero marginal productivity. I want to tell you students that whenever we discuss about agricultural sector, land is a fixed factor and all other inputs are variable. There is a type of unemployment called as disguised unemployment. In India, we have large number of people disguisedly unemployed in the agricultural sector, even today. Disguised unemployment definition is where marginal productivity of labor is equal to zero. So, when we talk of zero marginal productivity of labor, it is this what we are talking of. It means that the land is a fixed factor, so the proportion of work is divided among the existing number of laborers and somebody or the other is idle because there is no work. And why there is no work? Because of overpopulated, too many people on too less land. The concept here is that when the proportion of inputs to a given output become imbalanced, fixed and variable factor proportion becomes imbalanced, we will definitely find a stage, a situation where marginal productivity of at least one worker is going to be zero. I mean, there is no work because the work is equally divided or the work is divided among the people and the person who comes is an extra. You call that person as this situation as overstaffing. So, marginal productivity, the moment it becomes zero, it has to be taken as an alert sign for the employers. Because after that, if the rate at which the variable factors are used to the fixed does not stop, you enter in the third stage. Productivity becomes negative, it brings down the total productivity. And therefore, the graphs are moving down. Therefore, in the third stage, the total productivity starts diminishing, but we call it as a negative stage. After decreasing, it becomes negative because MP becomes negative. So, what I want to make you understand from this law of returns is, first, the proportion of fixed and variable factors need to be understood and calculated well in advance. Stage 1 and stage 2 both are considered as optimal stages. Because even if in the stage second, the marginal productivity is falling, as long as the total productivity is increasing, there is no harm in increasing the variable factors. But no employer should enter in the third stage. I can relate this with your simple office work. Pre-lunch and post-lunch. Just think about it. Does it ever happen that in the early morning when you reach office, your efficiency is very high and the rate at which and the speed with which you do the work is faster? And after post-lunch, you find that the speed at which you must work starts somewhere diminishing. If it does happen, or there is a point where there is no work, therefore the lunch break, I think some offices, they don't give the same time lunch break to all employees. Because everybody goes for lunch at the same time, the total productivity will become zero for that time. And the marginal productivity of each and every person will become zero. And average will also become zero. We know that when there is a lunch time and few people have taken the lunch break, the productivity will be slowed down. So this is how you can use this concept and understand it in the practical situation of how the fixed and variable factors proportion needs to be understood and how the law of returns can be related. So students, after understanding the law of variable proportions, let's look back to whatever we had discussed till now in the following slides. The very first thing you have to remember, as I said, that production function gets divided into short run and long run. Always remember, short run is that period of time in which at least one of the factors of production remains fixed. If you remember when I took this example of a coal mine, we kept drill machines as constant, capital, and labor was the variable factor. That means we have taken a short run production example. When one or more inputs remain constant, we consider that period of time as short period. Whereas when all inputs are capable of being varied, we declare that as a long period of time. So the basic criteria for distinguishing between short run and long run in production is just the concept of fixed and variable factors. If at least one factor is fixed, it becomes short run, and when all factors can be varied without any difficulty, it becomes long run. This was the law we had just discussed. Let's just revise it. Law of returns, also called as law of variable proportion. It explains us the relation between input and output in the process of production. This law examines production function with only one factor variable, keeping the quantities of other factors constant. We took the drill machines, that is capital, as fixed and labor as variable. We ignored all the other factors of production function. This brought us to the conclusion of three phases, as you had seen in that chart. First stage, second stage, third stage, compartments of that diagram. That is this, the law of increasing returns, the law of constant returns, the law of diminishing returns, and we have discussed one more thing, that is negative returns. If in any process of production, the factors of production are combined in such a way that if varying quantity of one factor, that is when we change one factor, labor, with fixed quantity of other factors, that is the capital, the machine, there will be three tendencies about the additional or marginal output. What we had studied in the diagram and in that schedule. In the beginning, as more and more units of variable factor are added to the units of fixed factor, additional output will go on increasing. So initially the output was increasing, and therefore we called it as increasing returns. Then what happened later on? If in this process of production, the factors of production are combined in such a way that varying quantity of one factor is combined with fixed quantity of other factors, and you find that as more and more units of variable factor are fed into the process of production, the marginal returns begin to decline. That is, the marginal productivity starts falling. We have diminishing returns. This is what the graph we had already discussed. You find that the average productivity was falling. Initially, the marginal productivity was increasing, and then again it starts decreasing. The same graph. So this is the law of returns to scale, where you have these three tendencies: the increasing returns, constant returns, and then you had the decreasing returns. So this is what the law of returns is basically focusing on: how the output is increasing, becomes constant, finally decreasing, and then enters the stage of negative returns. So this was the concept we had discussed. Now we take you to long run. What if all the factors become varied? What if we can change land, we can make multiple changes in the plant, we can change even the technology, hire a whole new team of managers? Definitely in the long run, companies make fundamental changes in their production plans. That takes us to the next law. This law is called as law of returns to scale. Students, don't get confused. Till now, whatever we had discussed was law of returns. But now what we are discussing is law of returns to scale. Please remember, this law is related to long run. And what is long run? Long run is a time in which all the factors of production are variable. In the process of production, when all the inputs can be varied in equal proportion, if you double labor, you will double land, you will double capital. You know, you are increasing the variable factors in the same proportion. Then the relation between factor inputs and output gives rise to returns to scale. Please remember, I repeat again and again, and as you see, it's written here, returns to scale is relevant only in the long run, because here you are varying all the factors of production. To understand this, we will require a formula, and the formula is that the returns to scale, which is given as a sigma, is equal to delta Q, proportionate change in output divided by proportionate change in input. So our production function is given by this symbol. It is like a E. The symbol stands for production function used in long run, specially used in the law of returns to scale. We have to find the value of this production function by the formula proportionate change in output divided by proportionate change in input. How much the quantity is changing with a given change in input? This will take us to three conclusions. If the value is greater than 1, that is change in output divided by change in input, if our value is 1.11, 1.12 or 3, 4, then we say it is increasing returns to scale. If our value is equal to 1, then we call it as constant returns to scale. And if the value is less than 1, then we declare it as decreasing returns to scale. So under returns to scale, we try to understand the proportionate change in input and the proportionate change in output. We will understand this with a simple calculation on the board. So students, as we have just seen, the formula for calculating the law of returns to scale, there is a small working done here for you to understand it very clearly. What do those values represent? What if your production function is greater than 1, if it is equal to 1, and if it is less than 1? Look here, we measure always output on the in the numerator and the input in the denominator. So if there's a 10% increase in input resulting in 20% increase in output, our answer becomes 2, which is greater than 1. So 10% increase in input, if it brings greater than 10% increase in output, we conclude it as increasing returns to scale. In constant returns, the value will be equal to 1, which means 20% change in input will bring 20% only change in output. And therefore, it's called as constant returns to scale. And what happens in the decreasing returns? 20% change in input, but output has increased. Decreasing does not mean it decreases. Decreasing we call it because the proportion in which input is changing, output is not changing in that same proportion. Output is increasing but by a lesser proportion to change in input. So 10% divided by 20% and your answer will be less than 1. So we call it as decreasing returns. Now it's very important that why it happens. Why is it that we enjoy increasing returns? There may be many reasons which are called as economies of scale. You will be dealing this in a few slides afterwards. These are all the benefits which the company gets when they have specialized skilled staff, they have a sophisticated technology. Companies will always enjoy increasing returns to scale. Whenever machines start getting depreciated, whenever there is labor unrest or any problems, it will bring decreasing returns to scale. So students, the managers are always interested in acquiring increasing returns to scale for the company, and therefore they keep on changing the corporate strategy and policies from time to time.